If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
According to Robert Mueller's report, President Trump did not like that former White House counsel Don McGahn took notes during meetings and said he had never had a lawyer who took notes, but only because his old lawyer always wore a wire.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who is seeking the Democratic nomination for president. But first, a closer look at the Mueller report.
Today, the Justice Department released Attorney General William Barr's redacted version of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's final report. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Well, it's finally here. We finally have a redacted version of the thing that everyone in Washington has been anxiously awaiting for almost 2 years. And for 2 years, the media has been obsessively dissecting every morsel of information or speculation about the investigation. There was even the time Mueller was spotted at the airport at the same gate as Don Jr., and pundits speculated about everything from his clothes to where he was going.
We're about to have a wow moment. Stand by. We now have the photo. This was taken by Politico. This is Reagan Airport in Washington, D.C. The man spotlighted on the left side of your screen, just sitting there hanging out. This is Robert Mueller. This is the special counsel, who is the one who we've been saying knows way more than we all do.
You know, it's interesting. It's a wow. So are you, having worked for Bob Mueller, I know that he has two ties, a red one and a blue one. He's, you know, very solid.
Are we reading into the ties?
He's not wearing one. It looks as though, you know, I'd be curious to see where he's headed. Is he taking a little vacation, which is probably much deserved, or is he going to hunt for more clues?
They were speculating over the ties he wears. Blue tie means Trump's innocent, red tie means he's guilty, and no tie means Robert Mueller is ready for a night out on the town. Also, he probably wasn't going anywhere. I bet Robert Mueller goes to the airport just because he likes going through security. All right, you're all good, sir. Scan me again for safety. And on top of that, we've been living through months of endless speculation about when the investigation would finally end. In fact, the media specifically kept speculating about whether the investigation was wrapping up or winding down.
Do you see Mueller wrapping this up at any point in the near future?
When you read the tea leaves, this could mean that the probe is actually winding down.
That multifaceted investigation may be wrapping up soon.
That could very well signal that the investigation is indeed winding down.
Does this mean Mueller's getting close to wrapping up?
The investigation appears to be winding down.
Maybe this thing is wrapping up.
This could be winding down.
It may be close to wrapping up.
Potentially, the investigation is winding down.
That right there is my favorite House of Pain song. Wrap it up, wind it down, jerk us around. They've been saying the Mueller report was about to come out forever. In fact, true story, when they found those 20,000-year-old cave paintings in France, one of them just said, "Is Mueller wrapping up?" Now the report is finally here, but before he even had any idea what was in the report, Trump spent weeks declaring victory and setting incredibly high expectations for how the full report would totally and completely vindicate him of everything, with one small caveat that comes at the very, very end.
It was a complete and total exoneration. The Mueller report was great. It could not have been better.
The finding was very, very strong. No collusion, no obstruction, no Russia, no nothing.
The result was great. No obstruction, no collusion, no anything. Total exoneration, complete vindication.
Everybody waited for the Mueller report. But then it turns out that there's no obstruction, no collusion, no anything.
I won. No collusion, no obstruction. I won. I have not read the Mueller report. I haven't seen the Mueller report. As far as I'm concerned, I don't care about the Mueller report.
The Mueller report is great. It exonerates me. I've never read it. I don't care about it. You're like a terrible boyfriend who keeps giving mixed messages. I love you, but I need space, and I can't live without you, but you're crowding me. In fact, Trump even said he was being charitable to us by not overreacting.
It's a disgrace what happened. And again, it should never happen to a president again. You're just lucky I happen to be the president, because a lot of other presidents would have reacted much differently than I reacted.
That's kind of true. I mean, it really only happened to one other president, and he quit. Now, before we get into the report, let's just review what we already know. For one thing, Mueller has already produced a staggering number of indictments and convictions of some of the president's closest aides and advisors. I mean, look at this. This group has more criminals in it than a Hollywood PTA meeting. Two, even before we got the report today, Trump was already directly implicated in a crime to break election law during the 2016 campaign by paying hush money to cover up an affair. Of course, as you might remember, prosecutors mysteriously referred to him as individual number one in the court filing, despite also telling us that individual number one began an ultimately successful campaign for president of the United States. And then, in a big dramatic reveal, Trump's ex-lawyer Michael Cohen revealed to the world who individual number one was.
Last fall, I pled guilty in federal court to felonies for the benefit of, at the direction of, and in coordination with individual number one. And for the record, individual number one is President Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, dude, we know. That was like the easiest Where's Waldo of all time. So what we already knew was damning, and even Trump's inner circle seemed to know the report might be damning, which might explain why their handling of the report was so weird. First, Barr issued his infamous letter summarizing the report. Then a week later, he issued a second letter saying the first letter wasn't supposed to be a summary. Then Mueller's team started leaking and saying they weren't happy with Barr's summary. Then we found out they wrote their own summaries that Barr didn't use. Then we found out Barr briefed the White House on the report. Then we found out Barr let Trump's attorney see the report. I mean, Jesus, who else got to see this thing before us? I don't know. I feel like I come off as bad guy. Where are my Sharpie? Then this morning, Barr held a press conference on the report where he spun all the conclusions before reporters or the public actually had a chance to read the report. No one had read it. Well, some people had read it, as Barr explained.
Earlier this week, the president's personal counsel requested and was given the opportunity to read a final version of the redacted report before it was publicly released.
That means Rudy Giuliani got to read the report before the rest of us. And from the looks of it, he was trying to open his eyes wide enough to read all 400 pages at once. I don't like the flip. Spread them all out. Now, on the question of the Trump campaign's ties to Russia, the Mueller report says the investigation also identified numerous links between the Russian government and the Trump campaign. But in his press conference, Barr chose instead to highlight a sentence from his report that he knew would please his boss and repeated it over and over.
The special counsel's report states that his, quote, investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government. The Russian operatives who perpetrated these schemes did not have the cooperation of President Trump or the Trump campaign. The special counsel found no evidence that any American including anyone associated with the Trump campaign, conspired or coordinated with the Russian government. Again, the special counsel's report did not find any evidence that members of the Trump campaign or anyone associated with the campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government. As he said from the beginning, there was, in fact, no collusion.
My God, halfway through that press conference, I started expecting Barr to rip off his mask and reveal it was Trump the whole time. The Mueller investigation had questions it was supposed to answer. Now we have the report. We can take our time and go through and hopefully get answers to those questions. And on top of that, the guy who wrote the report, the guy who almost never speaks publicly, Robert Mueller himself, might actually testify in public before Congress.
Jerry Nadler, who is the chairman of the House Committee on the Judiciary, has now formally requested that the Honorable Robert Mueller, the special counsel, come and testify before Congress no later than May 23rd.
Wow, we might actually hear from Robert Mueller. He never speaks in public. Honestly, I don't even know what his voice sounds like. For all I know, he could sound like Bobcat Goldthwait, or maybe his mouth moves like a South Park character.
You will respect my authority.
We don't know. So once Barr was done with his press conference, Congress and reporters finally started to get their hands on the report. But the way they got the report was as weird as everything else about how Trump's team handled the process.
Good morning, everyone. So here's how this plays out. First, Congress gets the report delivered this morning on CD.
Now we have this interregnum for 45 more minutes before members of Congress are allowed, and of course the members of the public are allowed to see the CD-ROM of this report.
Any minute now we are expecting a Justice Department official to come and drop off a disc of the redacted report to the House Judiciary Committee. We are expecting, Jake, in a matter of moments, the disc to be dropped off.
That's right, a compact disc. They got the Mueller report the same way we all got Encarta. Seriously, this is how the government handles one of the most anticipated documents in recent political history? Was it a report, or did they just send Congress a mixtape? In fact, as reporters were waiting for this disc to arrive, everyone was literally sitting on the Justice Department website reloading the page where the report was supposed to be posted.
It is up. is it online? You can go to www.justice.gov, and
is
I think
it
it's... /storage/report.pdf.
We're just waiting to find out more. I'm sure everyone is eagerly hitting the refresh button on the Department of Justice website.
Oh, good. So the same way people see if they got their Coachella tickets. Also, can we hear that website link again?
You can go to www.justice.gov, and I think it's /storage/report.pdf.
My God, that link constitutes obstruction of justice. Just buy MuellerReport.gov or something. If you're going to make it hard to find, why not go all the way and post it at justice.gov/stories/report/no/collusion/innocent/witch-hunt/don't-look/stop-clicking/why-are-you-clicking/message-board/nafter.biz. But still, now we have the actual report. And suffice it to say, it's a lot more damning and nuanced and legally dense than Barr made it sound. For example, on obstruction of justice, there's that question of whether Trump had corrupt intent. Now, Republicans have been chiding everyone else for thinking Mueller's appointment would be the end of Trump's presidency. They've been mocking people for saying, oh my God, this is the end of his presidency, he's But apparently, one of the people who thought that was Donald Trump himself, because according to the report, when his then-Attorney General Jeff Sessions told the president that a special counsel had been appointed, the president slumped back in his chair and said, oh my God, this is terrible. This is the end of my presidency. I'm Oh, the one time we wanted you to be right, and you weren't. That will not surprise you to hear that even after all of the new damning details in the report, the president, who spent the last 2 weeks calling it a total and complete exoneration despite not reading it, called the 400-page final report a total and complete exoneration despite not reading it.
When I talked to people inside the Trump campaign, Trump advisors earlier this morning, they just feel like this is a complete victory. I talked to one Trump advisor who said this is a $40 million bill of health, for clean bill of health for the president.
I'm sorry, but Donald Trump has never in his life gotten a clean bill of health. I mean, for one thing, this is his doctor. Hey, good news, man. I did an x-ray and most of your bones are still there. Second, the report is full of damning evidence about the president's various attempts to influence the investigation. Mueller writes that those attempts were mostly unsuccessful, largely because the persons who surrounded the president declined to carry out orders. In fact, we've gotten so many more details about the campaign's ties to Russia. Just take Trump's ex-campaign chairman Paul Manafort as one example. Manafort communicated with a Ukrainian political consultant tied to Russian intelligence named Konstantin Kalimnik. Kalimnik proposed a peace plan for Ukraine that Manafort has since acknowledged was a backdoor means for Russia to control eastern Ukraine. Kalimnik wrote an email to Manafort expressing the view, which Manafort later said he shared, that the planned success would require U.S. support to succeed. All that is required to start the process is a very minor wink from Donald Trump. Of course, with Trump, it's impossible to know if he's winking or just trying to read off a teleprompter. I mean, this is what he looks like when he's just trying to read a prepared statement.
10,000 known or suspected gang members.
Suspested. As in Robert Mueller suspected that Trump obstructed justice. Again, the report is detailed. There's a lot to go through, and it will take time for journalists and political systems to process it. But it's worth keeping in mind that after Barr's first letter, Republicans told us it was a major political win for Trump. Compare that to a CNN poll that found many voters felt very differently about the Russia investigation.
Robert Mueller's work is done, and among the many remaining questions, how will it weigh on voters in the 2020 election?
So, look, this is a recent poll we just asked. We open-ended it, said, okay, what's the most important issue for your 2020 vote? So voters could say pretty much anything. But look at this. Look where the Russia investigation, 0% said that was the most important to their vote in 2020. Exactly.
Is that low?
Zero, zero, zero respondents said Russia.
Wow, that guy went full Willy Wonka. Zero, you get nothing. Good day, sir. So Mueller laid out the facts. And now it's up to Congress. In fact, there are multiple specific references to Congress in this report, including one line that is very direct.
I just think this sentence is enormously important.
Read it again.
The conclusion that Congress may apply the obstruction law to the president's corrupt exercise of the powers of office accords with our constitutional system of checks and balances and the principle that no person is above the law. This is an invitation to Congress to say you can do it using the impeachment power.
So now it's up to Congress to do their job. I don't know if they will, but if they did, the Trump presidency would be
wrapping up, winding down.
Wrapping up.
Winding down.
This has been a closer look. Our guest is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and a Democratic candidate for president of the United States. Please welcome back to the show, Mayor Pete Buttigieg. You were here in June 2017, yeah. And I remember spending the whole day making sure I could say your last name right. And now you're so well known, it just rolls off my tongue.
Yeah,
are you just surprised at the reaction you've gotten in these early days of sort of announcing your candidacy?
Yeah, just the speed of it. I mean, obviously, we were hoping for a good reaction. We were hoping for a good response. But the way this thing has taken off is past even our most optimistic scenarios. So now we've got a lot of work to do to make sure we have the organizing and the substance behind it to really take us all the way. But it's a fantastic beginning.
In the early days, before you had a name and face recognition, were there humbling moments when you were out on the campaign trail?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not that long ago, I was getting ready to board a flight to New Hampshire. A few people recognized me, came up, said hello. And then the lady standing right next to me said, "You must be Pete." And I was like, yeah, she'd clearly seen these interactions. And we had a nice little chat. She said, "Why are you going to New Hampshire?" I was like, "Well, because the campaign, of course." She said, "Oh, right. What station are you a reporter for?" And it was one of those moments to, like, cut me back down the side.
Yeah.
Where I forgot that, like, everybody knows who I am. But, you know, that's the thing you got to remember is you can feel like you can get into this bubble and feel like everybody's heard your message, when actually a lot of people still haven't dialed in for the process yet. They're not following the blow-by-blow. And my job is to find as many different ways as possible to get the message out to new people.
I want to ask real quick before I get back to your campaign and your candidacy, what was your initial reaction to what we saw today from Barr and the release of the Mueller report?
I mean, I guess it confirmed a lot of things that we were worried about, that we have a president who acts in a self-serving way, that there was a lot of behavior that was at best unethical and legally problematic, to put it charitably. And, you know, the way that the attorney general conducted himself as though he were the personal attorney of the president was incredibly troubling, too. At the same time, I think politically, I'm not sure it will change much. And it's one more reminder that if we really want to send Trumpism into the history books, the best thing we can do is defeat it decisively at the ballot box in 2020.
You have... I'm very good at judging how the audience feels about something. They're split right down the middle.
Yeah.
You have a military background. Yeah. One of the other things that's been true, I think, for the last 2 years, but especially sort of pulled into focus today, is that Donald Trump sort of always seems to want to dismiss military intelligence while at the same time boasting about what a great supporter of the military is. Is that a hypocrisy that is, do you feel more acutely felt by you because of your military background?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's upsetting is when you're, especially in military intelligence, when you're deployed, like when I was in Afghanistan, you do work believing, you know, the highest honor, really, that can happen to you as a member of the intelligence community is that your work goes to a policymaker to help them make a decision. You believe that they read these things carefully, and when people are putting their lives on the line in order to support U.S. security through good intelligence, you know, that whole system rests on the belief that the president, the generals, that they're using that or at least reading it, right? But that they're using it wisely to see the way that intelligence is being politicized, to see the way that military families are being treated as props by this president is demoralizing. And it's one more reason why it might not be a bad idea to have somebody in the White House who actually served.
You, I think there's this question, and obviously... You know, in order to be a successful Democratic candidate, you have to bring together people from many diverse backgrounds. It's obviously a more diverse voting base than I think what you think of as sort of a historically Republican voting base. Yet you... So when you make a decision, like, do you just commit to the Democratic base? Or when you make an approach to Trump voters, how do you speak to them? What message is it that any you or any of your colleagues who are trying to get this Democratic nomination approach Trump voters? What's the message you try to give them?
Well, look, there's some voters we're never going to get through to, but there are many others that I think we can. If somebody voted repeatedly Democratic and then voted for this president out of any number of reasons, but basically voted to burn the house down, I want that voter back voting Democrat again. And they're, you know,
they're sitting there in a house that burned down and they're like, oh no.
Yeah,
this was a terrible idea.
Well, to some extent, it came from a level of frustration around the system. And that's not to excuse the racism and other things that went into that campaign. But I think people are more susceptible to those messages of racism and xenophobia if they also feel a certain level of insecurity or uncertainty in their economic and social lives. And so what I think we've got to do is we've got to reach out to those voters, reminding them that we're the ones trying to get you a raise. We're the ones trying to get paid family leave. We're the ones trying to stop the Republican Congress from taking away your health care. And while we do that, and this is the important thing alongside that, we never budge on our bedrock commitment to racial and social justice, because that's where our moral authority as a party comes from in the first place.
You're going to stick around. We'll be right back with more from Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Welcome back to Late Night. We're here with Mayor Pete Buttigieg. You are a millennial mayor of a town in Indiana, South Bend, and you're very popular, it would seem, by most polls, but also I think people maybe living in New York or across the country don't realize that's a very diverse city that you represent. You've had some successes. You've also had some issues with poverty, homelessness.
Yeah.
What part of being a mayor do you think will sort of impose itself on being the job president most?
Well, I think what you learn when you're a mayor is that your job is not only to come up with good policies, also to run an administration capably, but also just to hold people together and to make sure that you're calling people to their highest values. I think that might be the part that we're most missing in the White House right now. And if we want to deal with our toughest issues, we have to have that attitude. So in a place like South Bend, still a largely low-income community because of the departure of the auto industry that started in the 60s, we've been able to reduce poverty. We've been able to put a lot of resources into dealing with things like homelessness, but you can't pretend that those problems have just gone away. And I guess there, you know, at the national level, you know, the president thinks that when there's a problem, you can just say the opposite and will it away, whether it's North Korea or whether it's a domestic issue. But when you're in a community, there are no alternative facts. If there's a problem that persists from a hole in the road to a homelessness issue, you have to just continue calling people together to work on it with you until it gets better.
I wanted to ask about this as well. During your announcement, you were on stage with your husband, Chasten, and this must have been, I mean, this is an incredible moment for anyone. For anyone to be with their partner on that day must be a special moment, but to think that only 4 years ago gay marriage was not legal, did that have a special, even added element to it for you?
Yeah, if nothing else, it's just a reason to believe, even if this dark and complicated and bleak moment in American politics, it's a reason to be hopeful. I mean, running for office is an act of hope. You don't do it unless you believe that it's at least possible, using all of the mechanics of the political system to make better things happen. And as somebody whose marriage exists because nine women and men sat and took a vote, and by the grace of one vote, we get to be married now. I understand how the decisions that are made in those big white buildings really affect our lives. The idea that at the beginning of this decade, I had a choice. I could either be out or I could be in the military. I could either be out or I could run for elected office. At least that's how I viewed it at the time. And the idea that just a few years later, I announce a campaign for the American presidency, and my husband comes out onto the stage to be with me after I do it, just shows you what's possible in this country.
It was a wonderful thing to watch. This is mind-blowing to me. You are the youngest person as of now running for president, but more people are joining every day, so don't...
You never know.
Yeah, you don't think you got that one for life. Also, Bernie Sanders is the oldest person currently running for president. When you were 18 years old, you won an essay in 2000 writing about Bernie Sanders.
Yes, sir.
And there you were. I would call that a high school cut.
Thank you for sharing that photo with the American people. I really appreciate that.
But it must be surreal to you now to, obviously, Bernie was someone who was influential to you back then to be sort of in the same sphere as him now.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote that essay. I feel like someone who claims to have discovered a band before they were cool. You know? Yeah. He was an obscure congressman from Vermont, and I just thought there was something really compelling about the way he said what he believed at a time when we didn't feel like we had a lot of that in politics. So I wrote it up, and I won that essay contest. It is a little strange to be competing with him now, but frankly, a lot of the people I'm competing with are people I admire. I don't view this process right now as having opponents as much as it has competitors. And we can have a lot in common and at the same time have rather different messages and be very different messengers.
My favorite thing about it is it sounds like a way he could burn you. Like, I was a congressman when you were writing essays about me. Well, that would probably be the way he would say it if he also was being nice about it. This is a photo that went around. You're running for president, but you're still doing your duties as mayor. Tell us what's happening in this photo right here.
Oh, yeah, this is a really fun one. So I got to the office early, which is rare. I was knocking out some work. Stepped out in the hallway to use the bathroom, and the elevator opened, and this couple turned up and said, "Mayor." This is exactly the kind of moment that my staff tries to avoid, right, that I'm alone, you know, interacting with people, accosting me, wanting something. But, like, when you're mayor, like, you have to have time
sure.
for everybody. And, you know, I was trying to be polite, but letting them know I didn't have a lot of time, and then they explained why they were there. She was on her way to get a C-section at 9. This must have been about 8:15. And she said, "I want to tell Mom all the news at once, so we were wondering if you could marry us."
Wow.
So so I thought, well, you know, I can make time for that.
Yeah.
So we came into the office. I found a staff member who found some ribbon. They hadn't had time to get a ring. So we took ribbon and made a little, made little rings out of it. And I knocked out, you know, by the powers vested in me by the state of Indiana, knocked out the wedding in about 20 minutes and then sent them on their way to the hospital. And later we got a picture of them with a really healthy kid and are just so happy for them.
That's fantastic. I also like I like that an Indiana mayor's office does look like the set of Parks and Recreation. I do enjoy that. Definitely, he's wearing Andy costume right there. Hey, everybody, that's Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.